Your Excellency, to be presented the Victoria Cross for Australia, Corporal Daniel Kieran. For the most conspicuous acts of gallantry and extreme devotion to duty, in action in circumstances of great peril at Darapet, Oruzgan Province, Afghanistan, as part of the Mentoring Task Force 1 on Operation Slipper. On 24 August 2010, Corporal Kieran of the 6th Battalion, Royal Australian Regiment, was a member of a partnered fighting patrol with soldiers of the Afghan National Army's 1st Kandak, 4th Brigade, 205th Hero Corps, which was engaged by a prolonged, numerically superior and coordinated enemy attack from multiple firing points. Corporal Kieran, with complete disregard for his own safety, broke cover on multiple occasions to draw intense and accurate enemy fire to identify enemy locations and direct return fire from Australian and Afghan fire support elements. During one of these occasions when his patrol sustained a casualty, again on his own initiative and in an act of exceptional courage, he moved from his position of cover to deliberately draw fire away from the team who were treating the casualty. Corporal Kieran remained exposed and under heavy fire in order to direct suppressing fire and then assist in the clearing of the landing zone to enable the evacuation of the casualty. These deliberate acts of exceptional courage to repeatedly expose himself to accurate and intense enemy fire, thereby placing himself in grave danger, ultimately enabled the identification and suppression of enemy firing positions. In circumstances of great peril, Corporal Kieran's actions were instrumental in permitting the withdrawal of the combined Australian and Afghan patrol with no further casualties. His valour is in keeping with the finest traditions of the Australian Army and the Australian Defence Force. Corporal Daniel Kieran awarded the Victoria Cross for Australia.
Welcome to the Global Recon Podcast. I'm your host, John Hendricks. We have an interesting topic of discussion for this podcast. I have two guests on with me, both who are in Australia. The first is Kristen Shorten. She is a journalist, does really incredible work. And what we're going to talk about is featuring, or one of the many features is the Australian Special Forces veteran who's on with us, Jody Brown. How's it going, everybody?
John, thanks for having us on.
Good morning, or evening, over in New York.
So, the reason we came on to record for this episode is the documentary series that was put together by Christian called Voodoo Medics. And Voodoo Medics is kind of showing, and it doesn't just include medics, it shows other special operations warriors from Australia and kind of telling the story of some of their experiences in Afghanistan particularly. Now, I'll be honest, I wasn't sure what to expect when I started to watch it. But, you know, the more you watch it, the more you realize that it's really, it's something very profound and it's deep. And the experiences are very real of you know, anyone who's been to Afghanistan and seen combat. And then particularly for the medics who have to fight and then have to work on, you know, their brothers who are wounded or wounded and dying. And it's very real and very vivid. And some of the people, including Jody, that you have on for it, are really remarkable in their own right. And some of them I've had on the podcast prior. So, Christian, if we can start, maybe we can talk just a little bit about your career and kind of what led you to Voodoo Medics.
For sure. Thanks, John. So, yeah, I'm a print journalist and started my career with News Corp in Australia, working for one of their newspapers in Queensland, the Courier Mail, about a decade ago. And, yeah, worked for them across a range of different mastheads and websites up until a few years ago when I had my daughter and went on maternity leave. And then I decided to resign and freelance so that I could work around her and my family. Yeah, I've always been a general reporter, so I've never covered one specific round, but rather a little bit of everything from, you know, politics and crime to courts and a little bit of defence reporting and things like that. But what led me to this project is actually my husband. He's a former commando from 2nd Commando Regiment in nice. Sydney, the same unit that Jodie served at. So I've always had a strong interest in the Special Forces and the work that they do, but you know, there has been a lot of coverage of the operators and their role, and so there should be. But I wanted to, for this project, really just look at the group of soldiers who had faced the most trauma in Afghanistan. And as I started to research that area, I realised that that would be the medics who were serving alongside the Special Forces, so the kilos. And, yeah, then I just really started to reach out and try and find out who were some of the best kilos who had served in Afghanistan with our Special Forces over Australia's 15-16 year involvement in that conflict. And yeah, my husband made an initial introduction for me to Jeremy Holder, who is Australia's most decorated medic and one of the medics who you would have seen in the documentary. Jeremy was awarded a medal for gallantry for his actions over in Afghanistan in 2006. And from there, I just really started reaching out to find out who were the kilos who were, I guess, the most experienced, you know, highly respected, professional, well-liked medics who served over there with both 2nd Commando Regiment and the Special Air Service Regiment, but also the guys who were the best representatives of those Special Forces units who they had worked with.
So this project, and did this, was this like a something that took kind of long as far as, you know, time to meet up with everybody and get these stories and get everything ready for like public consumption?
For sure. I mean, the idea itself was in gestation for about 4 years. It was something that I'd wanted to work on before I fell pregnant with my daughter, and she's almost three. So about 4 years ago, I had actually pitched this project to an editor at the time, and they'd knocked it back. And yeah, then I just sort of sat on it. Like I said, we had our daughter and I took maternity leave and sort of put it on the back burner, but it was something that I'd been really thinking about over this long period of time and thinking about exactly what the story was and what the themes were that I wanted to focus on, being resilience and post-traumatic growth. I really wanted to look at those who had faced the most trauma and how they had prepared for it, responded to it, and grown as a result of the trauma that they'd faced in Afghanistan. And then, yeah, it was really this year in February, I can kind of remember quite clearly in February, initially reached out to Jeremy, and then it sort of took months from there for me to find out who those best medics were and make contact with them. And so really I'd say I started working on it in February, but then I guess the sort of 3 or 4 months prior to publication in October were quite intense with the, I mean, there was a lot of research and interview preparation and everything that happened before we started filming. We started filming in August and wrapped up filming mid-September, and then had the documentary ready for publication mid to late October, and it started rolling out from October 22. So yeah, look, I've spent, you know, the best part of a year working on it. But like I said, the idea was something that I'd been thinking about for much longer.
Yeah, it's really good. And I think part of what makes it good is that when you're talking about these kind of experiences where, you know, people are on the edge of life and death, and so many things happen in such a quick time, and things that affect people for the rest of their lives. Anyone who watches it, there are several instances where several operators or medics are saying, you know, this particular date is something I will always remember. And I think the reason that, you know, outside of the very specifics of somebody getting killed or you know, multiple guys being wounded or multiple guys being killed, it's just the gravity of it. And I think, you know, like I said, what makes this such a good documentary is that it's authentic and it catches, it captures the emotions that these guys were going through. And you really start to see that. I think it was it part three? I think it was part three or part four. And one of the medics, they were talking about, you know, how they were treating children who were, you know, caught in the middle of a fight or, you know, they stepped on an IED or something like that. And he just became over, he got overcome with emotion. And I think it's very real and raw. So
Jody. That's right. Sorry, I was just going to say, John, yeah. And I think a really big part of really illustrating, I guess, the complexity and the depth of these stories was also involving other characters besides the medic. So yeah. I'm sure you and Jody will discuss, you know, in with Jody's story in particular, a really powerful way for me to tell Jody's story was to bring in Chad Elliott, the commando who was shot and who Jody treated. And likewise, with some of the other medics in the documentary, we've involved the families of the soldiers who were killed and who the medics could not save. And we've got other, you know, incredible characters like Mark Donaldson, VC, who you've interviewed on your podcast before, and Bram Connolly, a commando platoon commander who was involved in a really heavy battle over in Afghanistan, the Battle of Zabat Calais, which you may have heard of. So having those additional voices and perspectives involved in the project and to also share their perspectives of the medic's role and to talk about the medic's role, yeah, just through their eyes, was also really important and really powerful part of the story as well.
Yeah, and I think, and this is something that we touched on when I had Mark on the podcast, was, you know, some of this stuff is like, or at least, you know, I'll speak for like Americans. Some of this stuff is like cool and sexy and it's like, you know, special operations and guys are on helicopters and getting in gunfights and all this stuff. But what people don't realize, and me and Mark spoke about it before we got on air, and then Mark kind of illustrated it in a very real way, was that a lot of these incidents that are spoken about that, you know, sound so cool and whatever, it's really like the worst day of a lot of people's lives, you know. For a guy Absolutely. That was, right, and it's for, you know, a guy that was killed or a guy that was wounded and that would affect him for the rest of his life. And then the medic that had to treat the wounded or the family of the guy who was killed. And it's just, you know, so many people are connected to a single incident. And the people that are connected don't even have to be there. You know what I mean? So, just kind of food for thought for the audience and for people who are interested in this kind of genre of content, I'll call it. And again, this is just, you know, to me, this is why it's such a great documentary, because you capture the authenticity of you know, what these guys were going through. So it's done really well. What I'll do when I post the episode is I'll put links for it in the podcast description and on social media. So if anyone who hasn't seen it and they listen to this episode, they will have the opportunity to do so. So Jody, I would like to talk about your career a little bit in the Australian Army. And then if we could kind of walk through that and then talk about your involvement in Voodoo Medics and then if you can share a story of a time in combat where you treated an Australian.
Sure, no worries. Thanks, John, for having me on the show. It's Yeah, I guess I'll start off with joined back in 2002 to the general or regular army after finishing the basic medical technician course up in down in Victoria. I was posted up to Townsville, which is up in far north Queensland. From there, I spent roughly 18 months just going about the general support battalion as a medic there. I was working in a resuscitation team, so rapid or ready company group. Deployed to Timor in 2006, and then at the end of that deployment, I was posted to 4-Hour Commando, who have now been renamed to Commando Regiment down in Sydney. As soon as I got to the unit, I was pretty much sent on to various insertion skill courses, including paratroop course, and it's actually, I think, march out night from that course, I found out Alpha Company were deploying to Afghanistan. Leading into the summer months, so the fighting season over there. Jeremy Holder, who features heavily in the documentary Voodoo Medics, he actually gave me the handover, so he completed rotation 3. And he didn't gloss it up at all. He just told me how it was, ran me through all the equipment he was using on the ground, everything from med kit to, what boots he was wearing and what to expect. So that was a really good handover for me. I came from a unit that wasn't necessarily, operationally focused or hadn't had that experience in heavy combat areas. It was sort of where I came from was sort of the MASH sort of setups, putting up the big tents and sort of servicing sort of the other fighting battalions. So for me, going into a unit that was heavily operationally focused and, a group of highly skilled, highly motivated operators was why I joined as a medic. You can do all the Gucci stuff, like growing the beards and the long hair and all that type of stuff. But for me as a medic, it was, got to the unit, hit the ground running, and then you were learning all different weapon systems, all the different tactics and insertion skills. And, before I knew it, we're gearing up to go over to the GAN. So, loved my time. As soon as I got to the unit, I was on rotation 4 and spent the good months, summer period over in Afghanistan. It treated a fair few casualties, both civilian, local Afghanis, and fellow operators from 2 Commando Regiment, one being Chad Elliott, who was a good mate. We were doing a dismounted patrol close to a mountain ridge, and obviously got the word up that there's a few Taliban up on the mountain ridge. So it was a bit of a recon, cruising up the ridge line. And unfortunately, Chad Elliott was clipped by a 7.62 round and in entry wound in a thigh about the size of a thumbnail, and shattered the neck of femur there through his hip. And he had a nice, probably baseball-size exit wound out of his right buttock. So I was called forward in one of the vehicles, and two of the operators at the time gave him a morphine auto-injector and was still heavily in a contact. So they were receiving small arms fire and RPG rounds. We had two vehicles up front that were just peppering the mountaintop with 84mm rockets and small arms fire, 50 cal. So as soon as I got there, it was a back door open on the vehicle and peel around. And as soon as I came out of the back of the vehicle, we had had 84 mils going up on the mountaintop, small arms fire. And, I just remember coming out of the back of the vehicle. I was like, whoa, here we go. It's full on. I managed to get closer towards Chad, and he was quite exposed, still out in the open. So we managed to peel him around to the back of the vehicle, a bit of protection. And then from there, we used a shot-off antenna off one of the vehicles. We've been shot off and used that as a central splint between the two legs. And there we patched him out, fixed the hole, identified any major bleeds, and then, put IVs in, adjusted his pain relief, and, got him back to a safe zone, ready for a medevac. So for that was probably my first major casualty, I think, on the ground. And definitely, there was a couple of months there that we didn't see any civilian or soldier casualties. So, from there on in, it just it set the pace for the rest of the deployment. There's definitely more casualties, both local and Australians. But for that was definitely the one that sticks with me. Chad Elliott, actually, he returned to to Taron Kaup and the American Forward Surgical Team, obviously stabilizing. And then he was sent off to Germany, where he had a big steel rod placed through his femur. He returned back to Australia, did his rehab, and he actually geared up, did all the fitness tests and assessments prior to deploying again on rotation 7. So the very next year, deployed again with our company. And to his credit, you know, the mental toll and the anguish, I guess, associated with that, I think just got the better of him on the day. Mentally, we're about to deploy outside the wire. And he was brave enough to put his hand up and say, you know, look, I'm not ready for this. So I had the discussion with his, you know, superiors, and he returned back to Australia. So to his credit, you know, put his hand on his heart and said, yeah, I'm not mentally ready for this. So, yeah, still keeping contact, obviously, through the doco. We've become closer again, made contact. And, yeah, it's good to see that he's doing really well.
Nice.
He's got some other hobbies and interests now and a little family. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so I just wanted to ask the medevacs that you guys were or that were working with you guys, were they mainly American medevacs?
So we had a combination. Yeah, it was mainly the PJs that would come and retrieve.
Okay.
We also had some other assets, so the Dutch. And depending on where we were operating, it could be anyone from Brits to Americans to Dutch. So, yeah, at that time. I think later on in the rotations, we had Australian retrieval medics on the choppers. But, yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to ask, a little more on the medic side. So I had Dan Pronk on a podcast before, and he was a major in the SAS, and he was a doctor. So I guess that's a little unique in some aspects. I know over on the American side, there were doctors going out with Ranger battalions, American Ranger battalions in Afghanistan. As far as the medic side, a lot of units on the American side have medics who are like everything is kind of like organic to the unit, including the medic. From what you described, and I correct me if I'm wrong, you're kind of a medic, and then you attach to the unit, and you train with the unit, and then you deploy with the unit. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So they used to have a scheme where you could do your selection course, and if successful upon completing that selection course, you are given a bureau, and they categorise you whether you're a Cat A, that was full-time operator, or Cat B, where you maintain your primary, I guess, employment trade. So for a medic, you'd be Cat B. You'd still operate as a medic, but detached out with all the extra skills attached to that role as a commando. Now they just do basically a Cat A category. So if you do selection, you are now a full-time operator. So you don't maintain that clinical, component or status. But as it stands now, there are other medics that have done the selection course and been given the bearer. But commonly you are detached to the platoons, heavily integrated with the platoons. But not necessarily with the bureau itself. So,
okay, and so something learning the title of the documentary of Voodoo Medics. I thought that was kind of an interesting title and kind of catchy. And then if you actually watch it, it's explained, where that came from. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So, Kristen, do you want to?
No, Joe, go for it.
Yeah, sure. So John Walter was another kilo that was involved with the documentary series. Good mate. He came up with the title rotation. I think it was 2008 there. So, yeah, the basic tongue in cheek sort of take on it is we do the voodoo, so you can do what you do.
Yeah,
and I thought that was cool. Basically, that's it.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So it's dominating the dark arts. It's basically a bit of a tongue in cheek expression, but something to identify the medics who operate with both SASR and 2 Commando Regiment and Special Operations Command in Australia. And what differentiates between voodoo medics and the general wider army medics is basically just the additional skills, the weapons, and just the expectancy on medics operating on the ground with special operations. So.
Nice.
The reason I was laughing then was because when we were filming, I was asking Jody to deliver that line on camera. But he's obviously been practicing before ahead of this podcast.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that little
that slogan little back outtake. In the
day. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but
that's funny. Yeah, John, I didn't even know about Voodoo Medics until I was well into pre-production. The documentary actually had a different name when I started working on it. It was going to be called Beyond Trauma because it was all about trauma and how to move beyond that. But, as I got into the process with these guys and was conducting the pre-interviews and doing all the research, I came across this title, Voodoo Medics, that they already had given themselves 10 years ago in Afghanistan. And so for me as a as the journalist, that was just gold. I mean, had this
much cooler name.
so cool. It was catchy. It actually perfectly reflected their identity as special ops medics. And it was just incredible to learn about it and the history and origins. And like Jody was saying, one of the medics in this documentary was actually the one who designed the logo, and a few of them were on the ground when this concept of unconventional medicine and unconventional warfare was coined. And, they coined the name together. So for me, it was perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Jody, as far as medical training and stuff like that, with what you deployed with and the everything that was implemented as far as TCCC and bleeding control and that kind of thing, is that something that you guys were focused on when you first joined the Army and became a medic, or is that something that eventually caught on?
Definitely. It's something that's evolved heavily in the last 15, 20 years. And I think a lot of this TCCC is obviously based on findings through obviously Iraq, Afghanistan and recent conflicts through Ranger battalions, obviously 75th. And so that's kicked on into obviously the wider military defense forces around the world. So I guess the training when I hit the ground at 2 Commando Regiment, it was heavily focused on TCCC. It was the ditch medicine sort of mentality. What you had on your back was it at the time. So you are doing those highly invasive procedures on the ground. And, you're expected to sort of stabilize the patient or patients, anywhere from the golden hour and beyond, depending on, logistics and airframes and things like that that you have at your disposal. But, in comparison to when I first started my medics training course, it was sort of back in the era of, Vietnam era sort of medicine,
right?
Which obviously dealt with some pretty catastrophic injuries and trauma-based sort of learnings there. But it's definitely the hard and fast on the ground. So your tourniquets, your wound packing gauze, you're doing invasive airways and things alike. So and the good thing about the Australian Special Operations Command is they put a huge emphasis on that. Obviously, they were seeing the type of casualties they were getting on the ground in these early rotations to Afghanistan and Iraq. So the funding and, the importance of that definitely allowed the medics to, we're going in doing placements on road with paramedics, working in theatres, doing tubes, advanced airways, and other things alike there. So definitely the training definitely set us up for the casualties on the ground overseas.
So for people who might not be familiar with the Golden Hour, can you explain that?
Sure. So based on 60 minutes, that's the opportune amount of time that you need to stabilize a patient, get them back to definitive care. So whether that's a Roll 3 or above or a forward surgical team, that gives you the best chance of survival for your patient or casualty. That's the optimum time that you want. They do talk about Platinum 10 now, and that's where you are, obviously, stabilizing the patient, any potential life-threatening hemorrhages, injuries, or any airway compromises there. So,
and the Platinum 10, that's actually the first time I'm hearing that. Is that the Platinum 10 minutes?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting. I've never actually heard that. So Kristen, I wanted to ask you, you know, you're obviously with your husband being a former commando, some of this is probably not new to you, but as you go through this and you meet different people and you hear these stories and you prepare to tell this story, what effect does it have on you? And did you feel like you've learned anything from this experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Like as a journo, you know, I always am really conscious of everything that I report being accurate. But I think working on a project like this sort of took that to another level because, you know, this is my husband's community and these are people who we are like intimately connected to through my husband's work. And although my husband isn't personally mates with most of these guys, just due to serving at different times and in different companies within Second Commando Regiment and some of them being from SAS, he might not have directly worked with them or known them personally, but we're all kind of a part of the same community and connected generally like pretty closely. So I guess for me, because this is such a personal project in that regard, I just felt really conscious of firstly doing the story justice, as I would with any story endeavour to, but probably even more so, just doing the story justice and making sure that it was, you know, completely 100% accurate, that there were no factual mistakes, you know, that the guys were comfortable with the way that they were represented. And just making sure it was, you know, as good as it could possibly be and as perfect as it could be. So in terms of the content, you know, it definitely moves me, even though I was there doing the interviews and I was involved in every aspect of it. You know, still watching the documentary, there are particular episodes and moments that give me goosebumps and make me feel emotional as well. So, you know, I guess when I'm on the ground doing the interviews and I'm in that zone, you know, I'm really focused on the job at hand, but being able to sit back and watch the documentary, I definitely, you know, feel quite moved and emotional about it as well. So, and I feel now, I guess, really intimately connected to everyone who was involved. And I think what was really special about this project is, I think Jody might say the same, given, you know, having mentioned before, you know, having reconnected with Chad during this process. But for me personally, like, I feel very connected to everyone involved, and I feel like we really kind of forged some strong bonds and friendships during the process of making it, because it was such a long process over so many months, and there was a lot of constant and ongoing contact within the group. So I feel like we've forged some really strong friendships, and it's the most personal project that I've ever worked on, I would say. So I think that, yeah, that made it really special, and just the level of care and attention to detail that I put into it, I'd say is higher than, you know, on any project I've ever worked on before.
Yeah, you know, just talking about these kind of things and these experiences, I think it just has a different flavor to it than if you're talking about politics or something like that, you know? So Jody, I want to ask you, you know, having been, so when was it that you got out of the Australian Army, Jody?
I got out 2009, mid-year 2009.
Okay. So it's been about 10 years since you've got out.
That's it.
So, you know, something that's been brought up, particularly in the United States, is the topic of mental health, of post-traumatic stress, and, you know, not the physical wound, but the emotional wound on warfighters. Sure. Doing some research on it, this is not something that is exclusive to this generation of warriors. It's something that's existed for a very long time. It's just had different names over the years. In World War II, I believe they called it shell shock. During the American Civil War, they called it soldier's heart. And this is something that I've spoken to, you know, many different individuals about this, and sometimes talking about it helps. And I think the nature of special operations is, you know, everything is need to know and kept, you know, kind of a tight circle, and you don't speak about it. But in some ways, post-service, I think that kind of works against the individual. And not that, you know, things shouldn't be kept secret and quiet, you know, for several reasons, but did you feel like, and I'm asking this for you personally and then for any of the guys involved that you know or that you've spoken to, did anyone feel like maybe they felt better after doing this project?
Yeah, definitely. I think a really positive thing that came out of the Voodoo Medics documentary was the spin that Kristen's done. It sort of highlights the fact that we're trying to reverse that stigma that not every deployed veteran, you know, to Iraq, Afghanistan, you name it, is suffering post-deployments. So take for example, there's a lot of guys within the documentary and a lot of other great soldiers out there that are doing really well post-military service. So, you know, you got Bram Connolly, that's he's writing books now, living the dream. You got Brad Watts is doing really well and speaks heavily on his, you know, his daughter and his son. You've got Jeremy Holder running a highly successful company from Sydney. So I guess just going back, it's a really good positive story, and sort of highlights the fact that, you know, that trying to reverse the stigma, not everyone that's deployed is suffering both mentally and physically. And I think another point as well, it sort of draws on that title of post-traumatic stress disorder that a lot of people will refer to.
Right.
And a few key people in the doco series, you know, talk about it should be regarded as post-traumatic stress. Right. And that should be the title. It shouldn't be classed as a disorder as such.
Right.
I find another positive spin on the docu series is just getting those stories out in the open as well. You know, sometimes it can be really good for those veterans to talk about that. Yeah. It could be something that they've bottled up over the years. But even just for the sheer history and I guess the exposure for both, you know, Special Operations Command and the guys involved on, you know, some of those big battles fought, and the things that the companies or the battalions have, the regiments have achieved on those operations is huge. So, yeah, some good stories coming out of this docu-series. And I think for the guys that maybe are dealing with some post-traumatic stress, it's a good way, and it sort of emphasises, and it sort of tied in with the Invictus Games that were recently held in Australia to talk about it, seek that help, and yeah, touch on those services that are available if you are having hard times. So.
Yeah, I just saw the, I think Mark Donaldson was posting about it, the Invictus Games on his Instagram.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, Dono was an ambassador at the Invictus Games for Boeing Defence Australia, the company he works for now. But just on what Jody was saying and your question, John, I think for some of the guys involved in the documentary, it was actually the first time that they had properly debriefed about some of those incidents that they were involved in, which right. is probably why, you know, the emotions kind of hit at times when they were talking about them, because, it was a long time ago, and they sort of, you know, compartmentalized those events and hadn't really had a detailed debrief about them. And like that incident that you mentioned from episode 3 where Brad broke down when talking about the 5-year-old Afghan girl who we treated. Look, it was the first time he talked about it. So I think it was sort of unexpected that the emotions would hit that way. But when you've bottled something up for that long, it's totally understandable that that would affect you when you do finally, yeah, just unpack it.
Yeah, and it's something that I've seen before, but talking to different people, mainly on the American side, but one guy, he's a good friend of mine, and he was he had pretty bad traumatic brain injuries just from several years of deploying and, you know, training, getting blown up by IEDs and things like that. And he was a American Special Forces medic, so he was a Green Beret on 18 Delta, and they run the Special Operations Medical Course in the United States, which all the services send their guys to the course. They go through the course, they get certified, and then they go back to their respective units. And you know, we were talking, and he was telling me about a time that he was treating a child in Afghanistan, and he got so emotional just talking about how they couldn't save her. And it's just like, you know, you think about these guys, and not just special operations, just infantry, combat arms in general, you know, men who are going into combat and fighting killing the enemy, and then, you know, watching their teammates and their friends get killed and wounded. And then something that, you know, brings the emotions to the surface is them talking about a little girl in a village in Afghanistan. You know, it just kind of shows the human aspect of it. And I think, you know, when I was watching that part, I was like, wow, this is really good, because this is the authentic experience of an Australian warfighter. And I think people are really going to appreciate that.
Yeah, it showed the humanity of their role and the complexity of their role as well. But also that moment for that medic, Brad, it was such a moment of vulnerability, but there was so much strength in that, to see that, you know, he's such a resilient, strong guy, but you can be that and still also be emotionally affected by these incidents, particularly involving kids.
Yeah, and I think, you know, especially if it's the first time he's spoken about it, you know, maybe he's talked about it with his family, I'm not sure, but especially if he hasn't, you know, the families are going to watch this, you know, and then they now know in detail what, you know, what their family members have gone through overseas. And, you know, even though we're just talking about one specific individual, in that case was the medic, like I said before, it really affects everybody around him, his teammates, and his family. And I think in many ways, you know, for security reasons, because, you know, we're both from different countries, but we are allies, and our overseas operations, soldiers and sailors and airmen from both countries work together during many conflicts, but most recently in Afghanistan and the global war on terror. So I think outside of the need for secrecy and security, I think it does wonders for young, in this case, for young Australian men who are interested in joining the army or joining the military, to hear these stories of the guys who were there before they were. And in many ways, it sets the bar, you know, and then they feel like they have to keep that or raise it. And I think it does wonders for, you know, the younger generation who is considering or interested in service to their country.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely shows you the true aspect of, you know, recent conflicts overseas. And I just want to draw on the point, obviously, from the last discussion was, you know, when I was overseas and running around in the desert, I was, 24, 25 years old, so that's quite young. And for a lot of the soldiers at the time that were dealing with some pretty pretty tense moments and incidences. And it's interesting to see, you know, you're 10 years later, you know, it's probably the first time that I've spoken about some of the casualties I've seen through this doco with a few mates, you know, and family members. I think definitely being in that special operations command units, you know, you're not allowed to sort of talk about, you know, operational security and events that happened overseas. That's just the normality of, when you are posted to those units. So is that spin on it? And then obviously there are times where, you know, veterans just don't feel that they can talk about those things. So, but yeah, definitely. I think it shows the development of, especially Australia's Defence Force capability, and developments in modern medicine as well. So modern military medicine and the things that they've achieved overseas, working with both the Americans, the British, you name it. I think it's another positive that's come out of those campaigns is, you know, we're updating our tactics, we're updating our equipment, and especially the modern military medicine. It's come a long way. So
Jody, let me ask you, did you watch this with your family?
No, definitely not. Okay. They have been watching. I've been working away at the moment. But, yeah, my partner, she's watched them all. And definitely there's a few things that she wasn't aware of. It was a bit of an eye-opener to her. But I think the good thing is it sparks that conversation. If people feel the need that they can talk about it, yeah, go ahead.
And Christian, if you don't mind me asking, how did your husband feel about watching it?
Oh, great. You know, he's really supportive and really proud of the project. So, you know, obviously, like, reporting on defence and particularly special operations is such a sensitive area. But, you know, I had his support and his blessing from the beginning, and he always understood what my vision and intention was for the project and, you know, was 100% behind me on that. I think, just knowing that, you know, my intention was to tell this story of trauma, resilience and post-traumatic growth, but also to shine a light on the work of the medics or the kilos over in Afghanistan and give them acknowledgement and credit for their efforts because they've gone so largely unrecognized. You know, I think that, gave him that confidence in me, in the story and what it was as well that I was trying to do. Cause, you know, my intention was never to kind of, you know, do any sort of, expose on special operations or reveal any sensitive or classified information or anything like that. And I was always really conscious to not do that. That was never the intention. And I was really, just really careful not to breach any, you know, operational security or anything like that in my reporting. So, he's been a great support.
Nice. And is this something, like, did the government have to look at this before you publish it?
No, we made this completely independently. So, everyone involved had already discharged from the military. And, I worked on this independently from the Australian Defence Force.
Okay. And this was produced by the Daily Telegraph?
It was funded by the Daily Telegraph. So, they provided the funding and the platform for it to be published. And I produced it in conjunction with a freelance video crew.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, it was really good to have you guys on here. You know, like I said, I've seen so many different guys who are, you know, very highly respected, sharing it and talk about it, and it just really kind of spiked my interest in it. And, you know, just watching it, like I said, it's just and even though I'm not Australian, just watching it, there's a lot of parts where you get emotional and, you know, it just brings the reality of what is going on overseas to the front of your mind. And I think it's something that it was done really well, and I think it's something that you should be proud of, and Jody, you should be proud of, and everybody involved in it. And I think it gives the Australian people something to be proud of their servicemen and some of the extraordinary things they're able to do while deployed in combat.
Thanks, John. And yeah, I really appreciate your interest in the project and your support of it. And your podcast was instrumental in some of my research, I have to say. I definitely binged on a few of your episodes in the lead up to interviewing. So in particular, your interviews with Mark Donaldson and Dan Pronk. And I also really enjoyed your episode on Cameron Baird. So yeah, well done. Your podcast is excellent.
Thank you.
And a great resource.
Yeah, thank you. So if people, the audience listening, they want to check it out, where can they go to do that, aside from the links that I'll provide on the podcast notes?
Yeah, thank you. So the documentary, the 8-part documentary, is all available now to view at dailytelegraph.com.au. We also have a podcast on iTunes called Voodoo Medics. You should catch up on all of the documentary episodes first and then listen to the extended chats on the podcast.
And on the podcast particularly, you have all the same people who are involved in it on the podcast talking about it as well?
Yeah, that's right. There'll be 13 episodes, and I think we've rolled out 6 so far, including Jody's. Everyone involved in the documentary will have a podcast episode, which is essentially their extended interview with me. Not all of the interview content could be included in the documentary, so we've also published the podcast. So, but if you want to know a bit more about these characters and their stories, you can jump onto that and find out a bit more about them as well.
Awesome. So outside of the page where they can go and watch this and the podcast, is there any other platforms that you would like people to know about to kind of keeping up with what you guys have going on?
Oh, like probably just follow us all on Instagram. And yeah, when you go to watch those documentary episodes on dailytelegraph.com.au, there's a lot of print content as well. There's a lot of stories written about these incidents and these battles. For example, the incident where Jody treated Chad. I mean, there's, some really long articles which go into depth about those incidents as well, which I think would be really interesting reading for anyone who would like, to just deep dive into some of these events.
Sure. I think our extended interview is also available on Spotify. Is that correct, Kristen?
Yeah, Jodes.
Yeah.
Spotify as well for those on Android.
So just search Voodoo Medics on Spotify.
Yeah, that's it.
Nice. So, like I said before, it was great to have both of you on here. It's an awesome documentary. The awesome individuals involved. And it just, like I said, it just shows, what the kind of adversity that, warriors are facing in Afghanistan and elsewhere. And I really appreciate you guys doing it and then coming on the podcast. And Jody, even though I'm not an Australian, I want to say thank you for your service.
Thank you very much, John. Thanks for having us on the show. Really appreciate it and the support. And look forward to hearing your responses about the rest of those episodes.
Nice.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. Thank you.